And it is another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. It is the week after Thanksgiving. If you're listening to this live, that is. If you're listening to the archive show or a podcast, then I don't know what day it is. But it is the week after Thanksgiving at the recording of this show. And we are certainly grateful to have you tagging along with us today as we talk about life and hope and the things going on around this country and around the world. And I hope you did, for those listening live, I hope you did have a great Thanksgiving. This week also, for Hope, we are having our third annual Christmas concert December 6th. That is this Friday, December 6th at Maker City Church. Ready for Rain will be there. They are a local bluegrass and folk band here in Knoxville. Also some special guests. It's going to be a great night, fundraising event for Hope Resource Center, and also just a night to come together and listen to Christmas music, worship together, fellowship, and just have a good old time as we prepare for the Christmas season. And the Christmas season is certainly here. I'll be honest, I've been listening to Christmas music since before Halloween, but the rest of you probably have finally started to listen to Christmas music and get into the mood, into the season. I even had someone tell me today that I look like I came out of a Hallmark movie with what I'm wearing. I'm wearing a cardigan sweater, a tie, a nice wool coat. It is just like they do it on Hallmark. And have I been watching all the Hallmark shows? Of course I have. And so love Christmas. It's a great time of year, not just because of all of that, but also because we celebrate the first Advent, the birth of our Savior, and we long for the second Advent. And if you are celebrating Advent and you're trying to figure out what's the best way to do that, how do we go through the different stages of that, where's the scripture point us to, Hope, this year we put together an Advent study, and you can find that on our website, investinghope.com, and just go into our shop. It doesn't cost anything, and just put it in your cart, and you don't have to pay a dime, but you can download that. And we would certainly appreciate that. We are sharing hope stories within that and also pointing you to scripture as we, again, celebrate the first Advent and long for the second Advent. Today, what I want to do is I want to start with some good news that we covered a few weeks back, but there's been some more information coming out about it, and that is the numbers the CDC have recently released showing abortion in decline. There's an article over at National Review written by Michael New. And it's a great article as it points out the decline in abortions and also kind of the reasoning for that. And we'll discuss that as I go forward. But first, I want to go through this article over at National Review, again by Michael New. And he starts, the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, has released abortion data for 2016, indicating that U.S. abortion rate has continued to decline, a trend that began in 1980. Between 2015 and 2016, both the number of abortions and the abortion rate, the number of abortions per 1,000 U.S. women of childbearing age, decreased by about 2%. The decline was fairly consistent, as 33 of the 46 states that reported abortion data saw their numbers decline. This is good news for pro-lifers and for anyone who wants to see the incidence of abortion decrease. While much of the analysis of new abortion data typically focuses on short-term trends, the long-term decline in the U.S. abortion rate is even more impressive. According to the CDC, the abortion rate has fallen by more than 25% between 2007 and 2016 among the 47 states that reported abortion data consistently during that time span, excluding California, Maryland, New Hampshire, which did not report abortion numbers. The data also indicate that the abortion rate has fallen by approximately 50% since 1980. Listen to that number again. The data indicates that the abortion rate has fallen by approximately 50% since 1980. The abortion trends reported by the CDC are similar to those shown by estimates from the Guttmacher Institute, which in September released its estimates for U.S. abortion data for 2017. Most of the media coverage of declining abortion numbers typically credits increased contraception use. But commentators often overlook a key factor in the long-term abortion rate decline, the fact that a higher percentage of women with unintended pregnancies carry them to term. Data from Guttmacher shows that between 1981 and 2011, the percentage of unintended pregnancies that resulted in an abortion fell from approximately 54% to 42%. Since the early 1990s, pro-lifers have made gains in public opinion, enacted a higher number of pro-life laws, and established more pregnancy help centers. The declining abortion numbers and the fact that more unintended pregnancies are being carried to term is nice evidence that these pro-life efforts have been effective. Hopefully, the new CDC data will encourage pro-lifers and inspire them to continue their life-saving efforts. And so I wanted to start there because I wanted to start with some good news. And right after Thanksgiving, we want to show what we're thankful for. What we are thankful for is less abortions. That is the goal. And a lot of times people will say, well, you're not pro-life, you're anti-abortion. And I say, yeah, you got me. That's exactly what I am. I'm certainly pro-life. But yes, I'm anti-abortion. I don't like it. I don't think it's right. I think it's unethical. I think it's immoral. I think it ends a life. And so yes, I'm anti-abortion. But what we're seeing is advances in technology, advances in science, and advances in support that people are, when facing unplanned pregnancy, more and more and more of them are choosing life for that child. I mean, we even saw this past weekend in a football game. Ohio State's playing Michigan. Ohio State's winning the game. One of their players, I believe it's a running back, made a great play. And the announcer during the game, the commentator, said, this running back, his mom had him when she was 18 or 19 years old. She actually visited an abortion clinic because she thought about having an abortion, but instead she chose to have her baby. And the announcer said, this is her miracle baby. This is her child who is now probably going to play in the NFL and make millions and millions of dollars. And a lot of people on Twitter and other social media platforms were saying, I cannot believe he talked about that situation. And why is that? Because he's humanizing abortion. He's saying that this woman had an opportunity to have an abortion and instead chose life, and now this child is doing something with himself. Now, what I would say, I would go even further if I was the announcer, and I would say that, yes, this life, this running back for Ohio State, amazing athlete, going to make a lot of money, going to take care of his mama, going to do all of those things, and we should celebrate him. But the reality is, his life is no more valuable than that of someone in foster care. You see, the value of life isn't based on what you can produce. It isn't based on if you can run a fast 40 time. It isn't based on if you can carry a football. It isn't based on if you're Tim Tebow and you're the greatest thing to ever walk the planet. It isn't based on those things. The value of your life is intrinsic, and it's there because of who created you. So regardless of where we find ourselves today, whether that be in a very wealthy home or in a middle income home or in a poor home or in the inner city or the rural community or the city or the suburbs or wherever you find yourself today, your life is valuable intrinsically because of who created you, not because of what you can do, not because of the job that you have, not because you can run fast. So that's why I'm pro-life. That's why I'm anti-abortion, because I love humanity. Why do I love humanity? Because of who created humanity. So my horizontal love for my neighbor is driven by my vertical love for my God. And the love for my neighbor is driven by the love my God has for me. Like, that's why we're pro-life. That's why we celebrate these numbers declining. Does that mean our work is over? Of course it doesn't. There's a lot to do. We had a full schedule today at Hope. But we can look at these numbers and we can celebrate, and we can actually look at a win here. This is positive. It's not just contraception. The society and culture and the abortion industry, we like to let you think it is. It's not just people are having safe sex. No, the reality is more people are choosing life. And that's worth celebrating. And so over the weekend, I went to the Fantasy of Trees. And if you're not local to Knoxville, you may not know what that is, but it's a... They raise money for the Children's Hospital here in the Knoxville area. And it's exactly what it sounds like. There's Christmas trees everywhere, and there's dance recitals, and there's crafts, and there's things for kids to do, and there's a carousel and all these things. There were kids everywhere. It was chaos. There was tons of crying, tons of arguing. But every single person in that building, every single person walking the streets today, every single person you come in contact with today bears the image of our God. And their value is intrinsic. It is not about anything else. So that's why we are against abortion. Because abortion ends a life. And especially if you're a Christian, the mindset is life is created by a creator. Well, who's the creator? God is the creator. And so if we believe he created all life, and if we ourselves grew inside of a womb and were born, even if our mom was terrible, even if our dad was absent, it doesn't change the fact that we are uniquely made. No one has ever walked a planet that was me. That's it. No one's ever walked this planet before and will ever walk this planet again that is you. That is you. It's you. And so that's why we celebrate these numbers and celebrate life. That's why we open our doors at Hope Resource Center. Because it does matter. And a lot of times pro-lifers will just kind of do the woe is me. We're never going to see Roe v. Wade ended. We're never going to be able to defeat the abortion industry. We're never going to be able to do this. We're never going to be able to do that. Look at these numbers. Hear these numbers that I just talked about. And look at the decline in abortion. We're winning. The abortion industry is on its heels. And so a lot of good work is happening, and we celebrate that. And we'll talk more when we come back.
I've got this Christmas song in my heart. I've got the candles glowing in the dark. I'm hanging all the stockings by the Christmas tree. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me.
So as we come back and talk about life and talk about hope, and we're going to be listening to Christmas music as we come in and out of break, just because it's the Christmas season. And frankly, I've been wanting to do this since August. But hey, it's December, so now is the time to do it. And nobody will send me an email and be upset about it. So as we look at the numbers declining when it comes to abortion, I think it's important for us to note that as we see this and pro-lifers celebrate this, we have to understand society, culture, the abortion industry, they are going to attack this. They are going to try to twist it and make it something it's not. They're also going to have other ways where they're really pushing their agenda. And we're seeing that in the current debates. When it comes to the Democratic candidates, every single candidate on the stage, every single candidate that's running for president on the DNC ticket is for abortion throughout the pregnancy. They're not hiding that any longer. New York Times and other major publications are even talking about it. Other folks have been talking about it for a while now, but now the other kind of left-leaning publications are bringing that up. But it's not just that. It's also in articles like the one I'm going to feature right now from Bloomberg, that says, here's the headline, Earth needs fewer people to beat the climate crisis, scientists say. And so what that means is population control. Well, why did the abortion industry, where did it get its foothold? Where did it find its genesis? It found its genesis in population control. That was the goal. Planned Parenthood, in its founding, was a eugenics organization. Hey, we need to eradicate the population of the weeds. And what they meant by the weeds were they meant minority groups, they meant low income, folks that they considered uneducated. And so they wanted a master race. I mean, Margaret Sanger of Planned Parenthood founding and Hitler were very much lined up together in their thought process of who needed to live and who needed to die. Okay, and so as we think about the founding of Planned Parenthood, and as we think about the Margaret Sanger Award that they gave out to Hillary Clinton, imagine someone receiving that award and being okay with it. An award named after someone that was for eugenics, named after someone that was for eradicating the planet of the weeds, of the disabled, of the low income, of the minorities. That was what the abortion industry was. That's what Planned Parenthood was. That's why they wanted contraception. That's why the big push came is of sterilization and of doing those things to say that, look, you don't have enough money, and because you're poor, you can't have babies. Well, now they're saying, well, on top of that, the earth is just in rough shape, and we need to stop having babies. Now, the interesting thing about this, and I'll get into the article in a second. The interesting thing about this, okay, it says 11,000 It says more than 11,000 experts, and they don't even put experts in quotes. I would use that term loosely. More than 11,000 experts sign an emergency declaration warning that energy, food, and reproduction must change immediately. Now listen to this. Here's the part that I don't understand. Okay, so they're telling me, a dad to four, and I don't know if we're done yet, but right now we have four kids. I drive a big old church van, okay? Like, we're all in. But they would tell me that our family's too big. What are you doing? You need to stop. You shouldn't have had any kids, much less four kids. They would look at my whole family, my brother. My brother has four kids. My other brother has six. And so as we look at that, they would say the Wood family is making this planet worse. You need to stop having children. You shouldn't have started having children in the first place. But here's the interesting thing. These experts, quote unquote, they're not starting with themselves, right? Now, I'm not one to argue that they need to take that into their own hands, but it's kind of weird that all of us on this side of the womb can dictate and say things about all the ones that are coming that are growing inside the womb today. Those future lives that will be here in the future, in the years to come. Now, see, we got our chance at life, so now we're going to say, look, no more. Stop having babies. It's ridiculous, is what it is. But let's look at this article. Let's see what these so-called experts are saying. 40 years ago, scientists from 50 nations converged on Geneva to discuss what was then called the CO2 climate problem. At the time, with reliance on fossil fuels having helped trigger the 1979 oil crisis, they predicted global warming would eventually become a major environmental challenge. The scientists got to work, building a strategy on how to attack the problem and laying the groundwork for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the world's preeminent body of climate scientists. Their goal was to get ahead of the problem before it was too late, but after a fast start, the fossil fuel industry, politics, and the prioritization of economic growth over planetary health slowed them down. Now, four decades later, a larger group of scientists is sounding another, much more urgent alarm. More than 11,000 experts from around the world, and if you can't sense the sarcasm in my voice, then I'm sorry, but it's there, from around the world are calling for a critical addition to the main strategy of dumping fossil fuels for renewable energy. There needs to be far fewer humans on the planet. We declare, with more than 11,000 scientists, signatories from around the world, clearly and unequivocally that planet Earth is facing a climate emergency, the scientists wrote in a stark warning published Tuesday in the Journal of Bioscience. While warnings about the consequences of unchecked climate change have become so commonplace as to inure the average news consumer, this latest group is exceptionally significant given the data that accompanies it. When absorbed in sequence, the charts lay out a devastating trend for planetary health. From meat consumption, greenhouse gas emissions, and ice loss to sea level rise and extreme weather events, they lay out a grim portrait of 40 years of squandered opportunities. The scientists make specific calls for policymakers to quickly implement systemic change to energy, food, and economic policies, but they go one step further into the politically fraught territory of population control. It, they say, must be stabilized and ideally gradually reduced within a framework that ensures social integrity, they write. The problem is enormous, yet those that signed this document still managed to strike an upbeat tone. For all the lost chances, progress is being made, they contend. We are encouraged by a recent surge of concern, the letter states. Governmental bodies are making climate emergency declarations. School children are striking. I guess they would probably want them to do more than just strike, but I digress. Lawsuits are proceeding in the courts. Grassroots citizen movements are demanding change in many countries, states, and provinces, cities, and businesses are responding. The report, however, comes one day after U.S. President Donald Trump began the formal procedure of withdrawing America from the Paris Climate Accord. How dare he do that? And so that's where we're at. We have so-called experts saying, not only are they, this is the part that gets me. It's one thing to encourage your neighbors, and we're all neighbors. It's one thing to encourage your neighbors, hey, you know, the planet's in crisis, they say, so maybe let's not have kids. That's one thing. Because then I can say, well, you know, I disagree with you. I love my kids, and I've been called to reproduce, so I'm gonna reproduce. I'm just gonna have a bunch of little me's running around, and so I'm just gonna do that. And so we can just agree to disagree, but go and protect your planet. You know, I know you want to protect the planet, but you still drive that SUV, and you still eat out, and you still do all these other things, and you fly in planes, and I don't really understand that. It seems contradictory to what you're saying, but okay, you go be you, and I'm gonna go be me. But they're not calling to just encourage your neighbors to not have kids. What they're calling for is governmental sanctioned population control, which would mean, and whenever a government institutes a policy, it's by the gun, really. I mean, it's saying you must not have X amount of children, or you must stop at X amount of children. I mean, China's done that. Do you know how many abortions have occurred in China? Because of their policy, their children policy, even one child, two child policy. Do you know that they also implement policies that say, well, you can have men, but you can't have, or you can have boys, you can't have girls? Which in 2019 is really weird, because are we any of us really boys or girls? But so we have these policies in place. What's to stop someone from going further and saying, look, it's okay for the wealthy to have children, but it's not okay for the poor to have children? And we've seen that. Bernie Sanders not too long ago said, look, I think in poorer countries, population control needs to happen. Now, what does that mean? They don't have money, so they don't need to have children. And a lot of times when you look at poorer countries, there's something else they have in common around the globe. And a lot of times when people are arguing for population control, they're doing so toward a certain segment of the population. So back in Hitler's time, it was toward the Jews. Look, we don't need the Jewish race, so we're going to population control. We're going to round them up. We're going to get rid of them. We're going to burn them. And so we had the Holocaust, one of the worst moments in the history of this planet. So there's been moments where government has sanctioned these type of things, and they targeted populations that were vulnerable populations. And I would say there's no more vulnerable than that unborn that is growing in the womb. And so it's interesting to me. We have folks say that, look, no one is pro-abortion. It's a tough decision. It's a tough decision between a woman and her doctor, and no one is pro-abortion. And then at the same side of their same mouth, they will say, well, it's not a life. Well, if it's not a life, then why is it a tough decision? If it's not a life, then what does it matter that people are having kids? Because they're not going to take any of the resources away because it's not a life. Well, no, see how crazy this is? Of course it's a life. But don't tell me no one is pro-abortion when every single Democratic candidate is saying we need to have abortion throughout the pregnancy for any reason, at any moment. And then we have 11,000 experts saying we need to have population control. Sounds to me, and I'm just a dude from Cornersville, but it sounds to me there are some people that are very much pro-abortion. Very much. We don't need to have babies. We need to get rid of the population, but only certain populations. If you have money, if you can afford it, then we want to take care of you. You have your babies. But if you live in certain parts of this country, certain parts of the world, maybe stop having kids. Maybe we'll sterilize you. If you're in prison, maybe we'll offer some sterilization process for you. That's a problem, folks. It's unethical. And it's trying to not only control who is born, but control who lives. Think about that. We'll be back.
But you can do the job when you're in town. Later on, we'll conspire as we dream by the fire. To face unafraid all the plans that we've made, walking in a winter wonderland.
So the conversation continues as we talk about life and hope and all that is going on around the country. Right now, I want to go to an article that is over the New York Times. Normally, I don't spend a lot of time there, but look, I read as much as I can when it comes to articles about life and abortion, regardless of who's writing it, regardless of where it's found. Just because I want to know what's being said. And so this one is about the current Democratic field. when it comes to abortion. And the headline is, on abortion rights, 2020 Democrats move past, quote, safe, legal, and rare, which if you've listened to this show at any point over the last year, over the last 2 years, over the last 3 years, I have been saying this so much, that safe, legal, and rare is the thing of the past. It is not anywhere near the current policy of the abortion industry. That's how they got us. That's how they got Roe v. Wade passed, was, look, nobody wants an abortion. We just need to have it regulated, safe, legal, rare, not a big deal. Of course no one wants an abortion. It's not good, but look, every now and then someone's got to have one, my body, my choice, all of those things. And so they got us Roe v. Wade, and then after Roe v. Wade was passed, it was like, look, we need to have an abortion. It doesn't really matter what the reason is. You don't need to know the reason. That's just between a woman and her doctor, and we just need to get it done. And so that is where the current platform is for the DNC. And so the article says the Democratic presidential field has coalesced around an abortion rights agenda, more far-reaching than anything past nominees have proposed, according to a New York Times survey of the campaigns. The positions reflect a hugely consequential shift on one of the country's most politically divisive issues. Every candidate the Times surveyed supports codifying Roe v. Wade in federal law, allowing Medicaid coverage of abortion by repealing the Hyde Amendment and removing funding restrictions for organizations that provide abortion referrals. So listen, those are just three things. They want to codify Roe v. Wade, which would mean that the federal law would say abortion on demand for any reason. So not just a court decision that they somehow twisted the Constitution to support, but they are saying we want a law that says abortion on demand is okay. And if that's not enough, they then want to say Medicaid coverage of abortion should be okay, so we're going to repeal the Hyde Amendment. The Hyde Amendment says that those funds through Medicaid and other areas cannot directly fund abortion. Now, I know, and you know, that the way budgets work, Planned Parenthood is reimbursed about $500 million a year for the services that they provide. Now, they say the money that we receive from the federal government does not go directly to provide abortion. But here's the thing. The abortions are happening in the buildings that they're paying for. The doctors that they are paying with those funds are providing the abortions. The medical staff that they're paying with those funds are providing abortions. Those funds are allowing them to free up other funds to pay for what? Abortions. Over the years, Planned Parenthood puts out their numbers. Every single service they provide has decreased. The only service that has increased is what? Abortion. So that's how budgets work. But they want to repeal the Hyde Amendment, and they want all the federal money. They want my tax dollars, your tax dollars to pay for abortion. And then they go further, and removing funding restrictions for organizations that provide abortion referrals. So it's not just, look, let us be okay and be pro-choice and just mind your business and leave us alone. No, it's we want you to not only mind your business and leave us alone, but we want you to fund it. We want your money to take care of these abortions. And the article goes further. Very few support restrictions on abortions late in pregnancy. Seven say abortion pills should be available over the counter. I mean, we have reached crazy town in 2019. So what they're saying is they want people to be able to walk into a drugstore and simply buy abortion pills. Over the counter. Just, hey, let me have them. Think I might be pregnant. I am pregnant. It doesn't matter. Just give me the pills. Craziness. So seven of them say abortion pills should be over the counter. And I will say this. Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete from the Notre Dame area. Do you know what? A lot of people are saying, oh, he's the moderate. He's the moderate guy. He's the, you know, the somewhat sensible candidate. He's for abortion over the counter. Yeah, he's not moderate, just so y'all are aware. Almost all of them say they would nominate only judges who support abortion rights, an explicit pledge Democrats have long avoided. Do you understand that? For a long time, they would sit back and go, look, there's no litmus test to who can be a judge. We just want them to follow the Constitution. Now they've asked every single conservative appointee, would you overturn Roe v. Wade? And every single judge will say, look, you know that I can't deal with hypotheticals. I will look at precedent and I'll look at this and I'll look at that. And now they're flat out saying, if you at any point say that maybe Roe is a case that needs to be looked at from a law standpoint, from a constitutional perspective, well, then you're just off the list. Which is, look, this isn't surprising. I'm kind of surprised they actually said it and have it in writing. But this is what we've known for a long time. It says, the article says, very few support restrictions on abortions late in pregnancy. 7 say that abortion pills should be available over the counter. 9 want federal approval process for state abortion laws. And Joe Biden Jr. Has been a theme for decades. He's seeking to recast himself as a full-throated champion of them. And so Joe Biden, for the longest time, has been not pro-life, but definitely not in the extreme when it comes to an abortion, when it comes to abortion policies. He's always been for the Hyde Amendment. He has spoken out saying he's personally pro-life, but he believes it's a woman's choice. And so I think that's a cop-out, but at least he was saying something in the semblance of, look, it's a life and we need to not be so flippant with our policies. And now he's just thrown all that out the window. Now he's saying the Hyde Amendment's wrong. We need to fund abortion. Abortion is okay. The 2020 candidates' responses reflect a fundamental change in the Democratic Party's approach to reproductive issues. In other areas, from healthcare to taxes, there is a divide between liberal and moderate candidates. Here, it is minimal. Quote, what you've seen is that it's no longer okay for any candidate just to say they're pro-choice, said Jacqueline Ayers, vice president for government relations and public policy at Planned Parenthood. They're being very specific on how our right. Now listen to this. So what she's saying is it's not okay to just be pro-choice. But again, they tell us all the time, no one is pro-abortion. She just said it's not okay to just be pro-choice. Just be pro-choice would say, look, maybe some restrictions, but not an outright ban. And she's saying that's not enough. With several states passing near total bans on abortion, with the first Supreme Court majority in a generation that could overturn Roe v. Wade, the Democratic candidates are at once agreeing that abortion rights require a more forceful defense and concluding that defense is not enough. The ramifications are hard to predict. The public is strongly supportive of Roe v. Wade. Now, I would question that, but deeply divided on how accessible abortion should be beyond Roe's basic protections. President Trump has shown that he is willing to, even this wording upsets me, but this is the quote in the article. President Trump has shown that he's willing to weaponize abortion to turn out his base. Now, including through misleading or outright false narratives. And that's not true. I think it's interesting that when a conservative says this is where they stand. When a conservative says the DNC stands for abortion on demand for any reason and they want you to pay for it throughout the entire pregnancy, and then we're told that we're weaponizing it to get our base out. No, we're stating the facts. The same facts that New York Times are talking about here, that every single candidate is saying, look, abortion, I'm pro-abortion. We need to have abortion all the time. Have it with your breakfast in the morning. Drink it with your coffee in the evening. Have abortion all the time. That is what they're saying. And you should pay for it. But if a conservative says anything, we're weaponizing. But for some reason, Planned Parenthood's not weaponizing. They're not going to be told they're weaponizing abortion when they say being pro-choice isn't enough. Whether any of this changes in 2020 will depend in part on how the Democratic nominee talks about abortion rights, particularly in battleground states like Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, where many swing voters are not as far to the left on abortion as the candidates. You can't rule out that it could become an issue, you think? Said Terry Madonna, director of the Franklin and Marshall College poll in Pennsylvania, depending on the candidate and to what degree they move it forward as an issue. The most striking change beyond individual policies is how unapologetic candidates' tone on abortion rights has become. Advocates have traditionally said they support the right to choose abortion, not abortion itself, and Democrats have said it should be safe, legal, and rare. Public debate is commonly centered on procedures after 20 weeks gestation, which account for less than 1.5% of abortions. The discussion has often been on opponents' terms. Now, almost every candidate says the next president should actively reframe the debate. Their language focuses on healthcare, bodily autonomy, and at times even the idea of abortion as a positive force enabling women to control their lives and increase their economic security. It's idolatry is what that last sentence. The idea that abortion is a positive force enabling women to control their lives and increase their economic security is the most selfish sentence I've ever read in an article. It's selfish. Look, when men walk out on women that they get pregnant, they're being selfish, and we should not celebrate that. And in the same way, when you say, look, I want to make more money, so I'm going to get rid of this child, that's selfish. Abortion is health care, it says, and health care is a human right, Elizabeth Warren wrote. Now, interestingly enough, Elizabeth Warren believes that health care is a human right, but guess what is not a human right, apparently? Life. Life for that baby that is growing in the womb is not a human right, apparently. But the choice to end that life is definitely a human right when it comes to Elizabeth Warren. The rest of the 2020 candidates sidestep or rejected the rare part when it comes to safe, legal, and rare. Bernie Sanders, for instance, wrote, abortion should be safe, legal, and accessible to every person who chooses it. Well, at least they're being honest now. Because here's the thing. The rare part never made sense to me. If it's not a life and there's no lasting ramifications, then why make it rare? You see, the reason why they say rare is because they know it's a life and they know that there's lasting ramifications and it makes them uncomfortable. It makes them uncomfortable. But look, they're not hiding that. So if anybody says they're moderate, they may be moderate on other issues. When it comes to abortion, they're far left extreme when it comes to abortion. There's nothing moderate about any of their stances when it comes to that issue. We'll talk more when we come back.
All I am is a man. I want the world in my hands. I hate the beach, but I stand in California with my toes in the sand. Use the sleeves of my sweater. Let's have an adventure.
As we end the conversation today, just today, we'll start the conversation back up next week. But as we end the show today, I hope that today's conversation is helpful because I want us to get to a place where we celebrate the wins. But in celebrating the wins, we don't neglect the fact that there's still a lot of work to be done. The narrative is still being controlled by the abortion industry. The folks that are getting the platforms are very much pro-abortion and against the work that we're doing. And so we're going to do everything we can to help shape the narrative. We're going to do everything we can to get the platforms and take advantage of the platforms that we have to talk about this. Some of that's going to be in conversation with friends, with neighbors, with coworkers, with politicians, with pastors. However that looks, how we have those conversations are important. And so the reason why I'm so adamant in this is because it involves a life. Look, this isn't something that we're flipping about. It is humanity. And I want you to be able to catch the wording that they're using. When they use population control, there's more behind that than just, hey, let's not have babies. There's more behind that. There's idolatry. There's selfishness. There's targeting certain populations on the planet, certain demographics on the planet, telling them specifically, you don't have babies. Whenever you hear someone throw out population control and then they say, well, we're the experts, I would be very cautious with that. Whenever you hear candidates say, we are for abortion and anyone that wants it, even if it's over the counter, and you need to pay for it, we need to pay attention to that language. When you hear a spokesman for the largest abortion organization in the country, Planned Parenthood, saying it is no longer enough to simply be pro-choice. Look, that's why they fired their last president. Because she was simply pro-choice and she wasn't pro-abortion enough. And she wouldn't toe the company line. And so these are things we need to pay attention to. They believe, many of them, we saw this, there was an article over the weekend about Kamala Harris and her campaign and how it's falling apart. And even in the article, it's saying that the staffers of the campaign started to believe that Twitter represented what the issues were. They really believe that. They believe they could go to Twitter and see what the liberals on Twitter were saying, and that would determine what they needed to say. Guess what? The vast majority of the populace is not on Twitter. The vast majority of the populace, they may not call themselves pro-life, but they certainly think there should be restrictions when it comes to abortion. The vast majority of the populace do not believe that you should be able to get abortion pills over the counter. The vast majority of the populace, these polls show this, do not believe that their tax dollars should be going to pay for abortions. So that's why we do the work that we do at Hope Resource Center. That's why we are grateful for your partnership. That's why we sent out a year-end mailing that should have been in your mailbox. If you're on our mailing list, you would have gotten that maybe Friday or Saturday of last week, right after Thanksgiving. That's why we asked for you to partner with us. That's why we're having a concert this week. We want to entertain you, but we also want you to partner with us. And so this week, December 6th, 7 to 9 at Maker City Church on 211 West 5th Avenue here in Knoxville, we're going to have Ready for Rain and special guests. It's going to be a great night of Christmas music, worship music, fellowship, just a fun time. At the very least, you're going to get to see a beautiful, beautiful church. Maker City Church, the building there is absolutely stunning. Built in the early 1900s and just gorgeous. And so we would love to see you out there December 6th, Friday, December 6th. You can get your tickets at investinghope.com. You can click on, as soon as you go to our website, you're going to see the banner on the page is the concert. Just click on that and you can get your tickets there. If you have any issues with that, give us a call at Hope Resource Center. We would love to see you out there. It's going to be a great time. It's going to be a fun time of just some good music, really, really good music. And there's nothing better than it being cold and it being the Christmas season and listening to Christmas music. There's just nothing better than that. It is what I think eternity is going to be. I think heaven is just going to be Christmas lights, golden streets, Jesus, and we're just worshiping. It's going to be that. A lot of. I know that probably isn't biblical, but it's going to be a lot of that for eternity. That's what is going to be amazing about it. So come out Friday, December 6th with us. Worship with us. Meet some new people and listen to some great music by Ready for Rain. It's going to be a great time. Investinghope.com. We hope to see you there this Friday, December 6th at Maker City Church. Talk to you next week.